Chapter 2, Ego Alert.
About 10 years ago, I started my own company with some partners. And after about 2 years of grinding out and living the entrepreneurial dream, we were a little cash-strapped. Sales weren't exactly what we were telling our investors or ourselves, and so we were pretty tight on cash. Now, in the early days, we were financing the business on credit cards, so every time we got a pre-approved credit card in the mail, we had a new venture capital partner. However, we also had human investors, and they weren't quite as patient as a minimum credit card payment. So, with the human investors being a little anxious, patient but anxious, we decided to put together a board of advisors, of business leaders and educators in our community who were respected. So in our first meeting, we gathered about 13 of these people, and we spent a whole night feeding them ideas and asking for feedback, getting opinions, and just trying to stay open to what they told us. So the consensus of the board at the end of the meeting was that what we had to offer was too vague. Just stay with the basics. Your original idea is strong enough. Keep it simple until you have more capital, more experience, and then expand it. So after the meeting, after thanking everyone, we got into my Volkswagen Bug. Five of us partners piled in and drove home. And it was quiet for a while. We didn't say anything. And then we started to talk about their feedback slowly, in detail, person by person. And we all finished and dismissed these guys as a bunch of people who were out of touch with the market. And we gave all kinds of reasons. They weren't progressive. They weren't visionary. They were out of touch with the market. And a little over 2 years later, after going against the very advice of the people in that room, we were out of business. In the end, the feedback they gave us was valid. We just couldn't hear it. We weren't willing to hear it because it was hard to think and even listen outside the personal risk each of us carried to every sales appointment, to every board meeting. Because to admit that we were wrong or to admit some kind of early defeat wasn't an option. In fact, as I look back on it, our competence and our talent was being crowded out by our overconfidence. Although we had a lot of talented people, we also thought we knew better than an experienced board. We often thought that we knew better than our clients, and we also often thought that we knew better than each other. And so we learned the hard way that the very traits you count on as your strengths can also become a chronic weakness. One of the partners mentioned to me about a day or two later and said, "You know, I think we might be letting our egos get in the way." And then guess what we did? We all dismissed it. We dropped it in favor of a discussion that favored what we wanted. And that's where the danger lies. Unless there is a finely tuned self-awareness, ego can be overdeveloped, even if you're not picking up on it. So here's the wake-up call. Some of the most powerful talents we had as a group degenerated into a weakness that took the company down, and the same thing can happen to you or your company. If you happen to be a very confident person, that is a great strength. And when you multiply confidence by ego, you get a sense of infallibility. Nothing or no one can take you down. Or you have the strength of sharp wit. You multiply it by ego and you get abrasiveness. Or you take dedication, a strength, and you multiply it by ego and you get workaholism. And the same thing can be said for a number of strengths. Multiply control by ego and you get inflexibility. Perseverance, resistance to change. Charm, manipulation. Ambition, coercion. And I guess the biggest one, the grandest one, would be power. Because in a company, we're all given some responsibility for a group or a team, and we get power, positional power, political power. And when we play that power out by ego, we manage autocratically. And when ego has degenerated that power into autocracy, it will shut you and your team and your company down.
And see, that's one of the most surprising things that Steve and I find. We work hard and long to develop good attributes, strengths, and skills that will help us in business. And if we're not careful, they turn into weaknesses. And the problem is, this is often a very subtle process. And so if you're unaware, you don't even know it's happening. And yet those strengths that you once had turn into weaknesses. Let me give you an example of how this can happen. Jack Welch, the former CEO of GE, could be the best business thinker of our time. In fact, in his book, Jack, he describes one of the darkest moments of his career when he realized that his ego got in the way. What happened is they decided that they were spending way too much money for capital, and Jack decided that he wanted to acquire Kidder Peabody, which was then one of Wall Street's oldest and premier investment banking firms. He sought advice from two of his most respected and trusted directors who knew the financial industry better than he did. And they told him not to do it. It was against their advice. But his ego crept in, causing him to think, well, look at all the success that I've had. I can make this work. Well, unbeknownst to him, because of illegal insider trading that occurred before GE actually bought Kidder Peabody, the acquisition was a disaster because it ended up saddling them with $26 million in fines and later losses that amounted to $350 million. That sucked money from every part of GE's profits. In fact, personally, he describes it as one of his darkest moments when he realized the cost of that mistake. The truth is, we can all stand to control our egos more than we do. And the challenge is that our egos are not like machinery. You can pull it out, look at it, fix whatever part is wrong. No, it has to be something different. We're talking about our mental and our emotional machinery. So how do you know if you have an ego that needs to be shut down? Well, first of all, if you're breathing, that's a good sign. And other than breathing, ego is pretty difficult to nail down because it requires carefully paying attention to your own responses and to the responses of others. Now, to compound the complexity that we have with ego, have you ever noticed that the people who have a problem with ego don't think they have a problem with ego? So here are three key signs, warning indicators, that would tell you you might be having a problem with ego. And of all the things that Steve and I have noticed, these three things show up most commonly as indicators that ego is present. One, you are showcasing your brilliance, trying to demonstrate how bright you are. Two, you're constantly seeking approval from others. Three, you're being defensive. So if you feel yourself doing one of those three things, that's when you ought to slow down and pay attention. There's no need to be defensive. There's no need to seek approval of others. You don't need to demonstrate your brilliance. Let's talk about these individually. I'll take the first one. When you're showcasing your brilliance, ironically, you lose credibility. If you really are bright, if it really exists, it's often lost in the cloud of this self-absorption that other people sense in you. And so they stop seeing your brilliance, and they only notice the arrogance. So people will get more hung up on your demonstrations than they do on the strengths or the weaknesses of your ideas. Now, the sad thing is that even when your thinking is really brilliant, people ignore it because they want to shut you down. And then your idea gets lost. Most people are anxious to accept ideas that are good by down-to-earth people, rather than getting beaten over the head by the stone tablets after your pretentious walk down from the mountain of me, myself, and I. So when your ego is revved up, there's a tendency to nosedive deep into the recesses of your own brilliance. Maybe someone identifies a business concern and you think to yourself, well, I'm a mile ahead of them. I need to demonstrate my expertise. I'll weave my magic and I'll fix them. So you quickly formulate some response, usually a lecture. And this usually happens while they're talking, which means you aren't listening to them. And as soon as they take a breath, you jump in and you start describing what you think they need. And you go on and on and on. And as you start talking, your own smile widens. Because as you listen to your own words, you think, wow, I am really bright. This is good advice. And if this doesn't fix them, man, I got more where that came from. There's no need to dazzle people with your brilliance. Are you giving good advice when you stun them with your brilliance? Who knows? If all you do is tell your colleagues what they should do, how will they take the advice? There are some serious risk and downsides to just trying to demonstrate your brilliance. One is you might be wrong. I mean, come on, admit it. At least it's a statistical possibility. And you also tend to start treating people like things. You start being more efficient with them rather than effective. It happens, and people will see you as arrogant when you start to do that. Team members will start to shut down if they feel like the whole discussion is about you telling them what to do, what's wrong, what needs to happen to fix this, and potentially you'll leave many ideas on the table. Now, those are just a few of the things. I suppose the worst is, if you are always the one telling people what to do, and then like good soldiers, they go do those things, and they fail, you will be the one blamed for failure. And no one will have any ownership or any buy-in into what's happening. And that's just for starters.
And here's a second way ego sneaks in. If you're only after approval, when you see or you hear thinking and it doesn't make sense, or if you see a better way, you're usually hesitant to share your perspective because you're so worried about what someone else will think of you. And if some miracle occurs and you do speak up, your self-concept is so wrapped up in getting acceptance that if the idea is accepted, then you feel accepted. And if it's rejected, you feel personally rejected. And what's really sad about that, from a business perspective, is that you don't give the unvarnished truth, or your insider's perspective, or share your technical expertise. And that's what people need to hear most. Instead of giving people what they need to hear, you give them what they want to hear. That's how yes men and yes women got their start. There's not much of a difference between, well, I'll use this analogy. We just got a dog for Christmas. He will do whatever you ask him to do as long as you give him a treat. He'll roll over, he'll fetch, he'll shake hands, as long as you stroke him. And there's often not much of a difference between a person who only seeks approval and a dog. They will do whatever you want them to do as long as you stroke them. So some people might argue that simply accepting or obeying may be appropriate. Could be. Let's look at the downsides, though. The ideas that you blindly follow could be wrong. And by the way, just so you know, you will be the one to get blamed. You aren't adding any value, any thought leadership. You just do what someone tells you to do. If you could be replaced by a robot, they probably would. You might leave opportunities uncovered, or you could lose the respect of those who actually do share their perspective. And you could lose the respect of those who are paying you for that perspective, for your expertise. So those are the first two, showcasing your brilliance or seeking approval. Here's the third one. Now, our third one is when you're defensive, when you don't treat your ideas as anything to be tested. You don't see it as a hypothesis, you see it as absolute truth. Facts to be secured. Ideas to be validated. And when you dig for evidence with the intent of proving your point rather than discovering the point, who do you listen to most? You! Instead of asking other people, who do you ask? Who else? You ask yourself. And even when you do ask others and their answers don't jive with yours, then what do? You discount their answers. You find some special cause that makes it irrelevant. And when you're defensive, to actually give up on your idea, and that's how you see it, as giving up, would be a major sign of weakness. So you don't listen. And here are the downsides. You don't get critical input from others. They don't want to be around you. You burn them when they give the feedback. You repeat the same mistakes because you don't learn. Because what can you possibly learn? You're always right. Or people shut down and that leaves you isolated, which is a big problem in business because no one is a lone genius. You need other people's expertise. You also create defensiveness in others. They come in with their guard up because they know yours is up by the time they walk through the door. And the attention of the business now turns from the business issues that are most important to be talking about to your personal issues, and you suck energy and time from people in the company.
Now, you might be thinking, well, that's okay, because I don't really have a big problem with proving how smart I am or really worried about what other people think of me, or I'm certainly not very defensive. And besides that, even if you are, you tend to think that you can disguise it pretty well. Well, people can intuitively sense your ego, and you can sense it in others as well. By the way, there's biology to back this up. I know this will be simplistic. I just want to describe a little bit what goes on in the brain. There are two parts to your brain. One is the neocortex. It's the upper part of your brain. It has the left side and the right side that most people are pretty familiar with. That's where you store all of your information and data, your experiences, your beliefs, your values. Now, just below that, near the back of the brainstem, is a part of the brain that we call the amygdala. Now, its function is relatively simple compared to the neocortex, yet it's sophisticated in the way that it does it. Another way of thinking about the amygdala is it's the emotional traffic cop of your brain. It allows you to quickly determine whether something is safe, believable, or whether you should trust. In other words, everyone has this built-in trust alarm. We like to call it a BS detector. And it tells you in an instant when to trust and when not to trust. For example, have you ever sensed, even after a split second's first impression, that someone shouldn't be trusted? Or maybe you've been in a meeting and someone walks in and you just get this sense that they're equally balanced. They have two chips on both shoulders. If you have sensed this in others, others sense it in you as well. They'll know if you have a hidden agenda, or if you're closed, or if your defensiveness is shutting down communication. They just sense if you're arrogant. When the ego alarm goes off in others, notice how the dialogue about the business issues quickly gets shut down. Ego tends to hold information and ideas hostage. It keeps them from being freely shared openly. And that becomes the crux of the problem. Instead of fresh, clear, uncontaminated thinking, you run into what we call verbal or mental and emotional stop signs that people throw up. They're designed to validate ego or to protect themselves. So pay attention. When your ego gets charged up, it will affect communication, and it affects it in at least four ways. One, it magnifies. Ego tends to amplify information beyond its intended significance or meaning. Two, it filters. Ego will selectively allow in only what validates your own thinking and your experiences. You also tend to conveniently discard information that's contrary to what you're thinking or the position that you're putting forward. Three, it alters. When you're under fire, your ego will bend or manipulate information just to support your own ideas or validate your position. Four, it fabricates. Sometimes the need to be right causes ego to create information out of nowhere, information that simply doesn't exist. Now here's an example of how ego can jump in to mess things up. When someone is trying to prove how smart they are and prove to everyone what a superior problem solver they are, they often propose a solution that they think is right, that this is the way to solve this problem, and they do it with an exclamation point as a weapon. Now, when the amygdala or the traffic cop in others senses this ego, people have one of two reactions. One, they pump up their own egos and they think, bring it on, or they shut down. Now, you might not audibly hear it, but the battle cry is clearly sounded, and people bring their egos all ready for the battle. Now, when egos clash in any conversation or a meeting, it doesn't matter. Any battlefield will do. And now that war's been declared, the lines are drawn, sides are taken, and you get into positional and political encampment. Any discussion about alternatives to what was suggested initially is now interpreted as conflict or dissension or disagreement. And because people have themselves so wrapped around their own ideas, any attempt to examine or to explore that idea is taken as a personal threat. So often due diligence becomes ego-serving and biased rather than to uncover or discover information. So people look to see what they want to see. They tend only to see what they look for. And it's no surprise that they only find what they want is now interpreted as conflict or dissension or disagreement. And because people have themselves so wrapped around their own ideas, any attempt to examine or to explore that idea is taken as a personal threat. So often due diligence becomes ego-serving and biased rather than to uncover or discover information. So people look to see what they want to see. They tend only to see what they look for. And it's suggested initially is now interpreted as conflict or dissension or disagreement. And because people have themselves so wrapped around their own ideas, any attempt to examine or to explore that idea is taken as a personal threat. So often due diligence becomes ego-serving and biased rather than to uncover or discover information. So people look to see what they want to see. They tend only to see what they look for. And it's what was suggested initially is now interpreted as conflict. But it fabricates. Sometimes the need to be right causes ego to create information out of nowhere, information that simply doesn't exist. Now here's an example of how ego can jump in to mess things up. When someone is trying to prove how smart they are and prove to everyone what a superior problem solver they are, they often propose a solution that they think is right, that this is the way to solve this problem, and they do it with an exclamation point as a weapon. Now, when the amygdala or the traffic cop in others senses this ego, people have one of two reactions. One, they pump up their own egos and they think, bring it on. Or they shut down. Now, you might not audibly hear it, but the battle cry is clearly sounded, and people bring their ignorance and humility. Humility will require that you increase your own awareness of what's going on. Information out of nowhere. Information that simply doesn't exist. Now here's an example of how ego can jump in to mess things up. When someone is trying to prove how smart they are and prove to everyone what a superior problem solver they are, they often propose a solution that they think is right, that this is the way to solve this problem, and they do it with an exclamation point as a weapon. Now when the amygdala or the traffic cop in others senses this ego, people have one of two reactions. One, they pump up their own egos and they think, bring it on. Or they shut down. Now, you might not audibly hear it, but the battle cry is clearly sounded, and people bring their egos all ready for the battle. Now, when egos clash in any conversation or a meeting, it doesn't matter. Any battlefield will do. And now that war's been declared, the line, they're the ones that initiated giving you feedback, don't choose to take it as a personal bullet and miss the point. That'll help you even less. Now, let me share with you some research. Over the past 10 years, we've surveyed over 150,000 managers and professionals from over 500 different companies around the world. We asked them to rate each other and themselves on 78 items of effective. Maybe they'll just tell them as a personal threat. Battle. Now, when egos clash in any conversation or a meeting, it doesn't matter. Any battlefield will do. And now that war's been declared, the lines are drawn, sides are taken, and you get into positional and political encampment. Any discussion about alternatives to what was suggested initially is now interpreted as conflict or dissension or disagreement. And because people have themselves so wrapped around their own ideas, any attempt to examine or to explore heads, and we pretend we're appreciative, but inside, it just really ticks us off, and so we do nothing about it, or we quickly and conveniently forget that we even got the feedback. When Roman senators addressed the masses, they had underlings whose sole job was to stand behind them and whisper repeatedly, "Remember, you're mortal." Your ego usually tells you that while you may be mortal, you're at the top of the food chain, or so you think. We all need someone to remind us frequently that we're mortal. If you can remind yourself that you're mortal, or if you can take being reminded by others that you are, it will make it much easier when you have to swallow your pride or eat your words when you make a mistake. Now, we've prepared a few questions that will come up at the end of several sections in this audio series that we call the Business Think Mirror. They're designed to help you expand your own awareness of how you're doing relative to the ideas that we've been talking about. So as you listen to each question, mentally answer how you fare, whether it's seldom, sometimes, or frequently. And be honest with yourself. No one's looking. Oh, and by the way, even though the questions will be focused specifically on you, you could ask the same questions of your department or division, or of your management or executive team, and ultimately of your company. One, when someone is giving me constructive feedback, I get defensive, even if I keep it to myself. Two, I interrupt people because their point is irrelevant or inferior. Three, I get uptight or nervous or intimidated when I'm around people who are in more powerful positions or who are above me in the organization. Four, I'm afraid to share candid thoughts and opinions for fear that others might not agree with or accept me. Five, whether I'm in meetings or one-on-one discussions, I spend more time talking than I do listening. Six, I view the people I report to as my boss and people who report to me as my employees rather than my colleagues. Seven, when someone challenges my ideas, I take it personally. Eight, I'm surprised when people don't agree with me. Nine, I solicit feedback from others with the intent and hope of hearing them talk favorably about me and give me compliments.